Welcome to Open Kwong Door. Today on the show is the second part of Kurt Browning's... Welcome to Open Kwong Door. Today on the show is the second part... I don't know what I'm doing. Welcome to Open Kwong Door. Today on the show is the second part of interview with Kurt Browning. So I think it's recording.
Hi, everybody. I'm PJ Kwong. Not with Kurt Browning, with Paul Doerr.
To be working.
Welcome to Oakland. Oh, I'll start that one again.
Maybe, yeah. Okay, good. And then I'll do one.
You know what, Paul? For me, it was really interesting to speak to Kurt Browning. As we know, our interview, we could have talked forever and ever. And what I really liked, and what we'll see in part two of this interview with Kurt Browning, is the fact that we go from his childhood and how important his family was in Caroline, Alberta, moving forward into his professional life and the importance of singing in the rain. Who knew?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that he's coming back around to the singing in the rain, which was... Would that be 20 years ago?
I think so.
That the TV show was on? And it's just interesting to see him and hear about how he moved from being a skater that was mad about jumping to being a real artist to being a professional skater and an entertainer and all of that, and moving into his TV career and then doing all his choreography and stuff. He's really...
amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
And you know what's so much fun? I went out, we had a long break one day, so myself, Tracy Wilson, Barb Strain, and Kurt, we all went out. And you know what? He is so well known, it's not even funny. Nobody recognized Tracy Wilson, nobody would recognize me, but honestly, everywhere we went, you're that guy, you're the Battle of the Blades guy. Mm-hmm. We got free vouchers for Tim Hortons Coffee, because it was a Grey Cup weekend, and they were handing out little $2 cards in the shape of footballs. We got free salad at a restaurant from the chef. And everywhere we went, what also really impressed me was his humility. People would say, "You're that skating guy." And he said, "Yes, I am." People would shake his hand. He waited to have his picture taken. I thought of him as really the role model for how to be famous. It was quite something.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear part two.
Wonderful. So tell me about your first coach.
First coach, we have to go back to Caroline.
Okay.
And her name was Karen McLean, and she drove in hard and fast on her steed, which was a silver Trans Am, slid to a sideways stop often. She was always screaming and yelling. She had fire in her eyes and big, huge mittens, and it made loud noises.
She clap, clap, clap,
and would pound and scream, and she was fun. Very exciting, never boring. Sometimes the mittens were on either side, left and right ear, smack. And she gave me a program. I guess I was 11. And I learned it on a Thursday, competed on Friday, and got my medal on Saturday.
So,
and forgot it, of course. Forgot 8 seconds into the program, so I made it up and came third. Got my first medal.
You know what? As a skating coach at the sidelines with little ones, when you see them forget, it's quite hilarious because there is that look in their eyes of terror, sheer panic. They have no idea what to do. And so you're forever making the spin, another spiral, do another spiral.
Yeah.
It's almost more fun to watch the coaches on the sidelines as they're trying to feed the kids some steps or something. And all you see is a child that's completely
paralyzed.
It's
just add water choreography.
That's right.
Stir and mix.
So you obviously love the show skating. I want to take you back, please, to that first show because...
I didn't do. What am I saying?
For sure. Because we talked a little bit about, before this, about, being a figure skater, especially in sort of a rural community, it wasn't something that was completely normal. Normal in the sense that usual is really what I mean to say, because of course it's normal. And then you've got the whole aspect of the yearly carnival, which in every young skater's life is a huge, huge deal.
Mm-hmm.
So the mums all get together and sew the costumes. Your mum probably made costumes for you.
You bet my
for
mom
the carnival.
Did.
Yep. So
lightning
me,
bolts over the shoulders.
Oh, those are the best.
I loved those. Yeah.
And was that your first solo or was that in the show?
That was for my novice Canadians. And,
okay.
And I think if I remember correctly, I can't remember the color transition, but there were brown lightning bolts to match my pants and I wanted them orange. So she had to cut orange lightning bolts and sew them over top the brown lightning bolts. It gets very complicated.
Your mom was a good sport.
Yeah. She was a good sport.
So when you went from Caroline, you mentioned Rocky Mountain House. What was there?
Okay, Rocky Mountain House is a bigger town, 5,000 people, who knows, but, you know, bigger.
Yes.
Had a Dairy Queen. And so we would...
to define it.
pretty much. So we would drive to Rocky. They had a real arena with artificial ice and that they could control the ice. So a Chinook wouldn't come along. Chinook being a warm wind.
Yes.
Chinook.
I love that word. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I like a Nookshook. Sometimes you have a Nookshook Chinook. That's when one of them farts. But anyways, just made that up.
I like it.
I wish I hadn't. Anyways, we would drive to Rocky, and what Rocky provided was more ice time.
Yep.
And I was on the ice with good skaters, and Rocky had a lot of great skaters, actually, and still friends with some of them. And we just worked really hard and had a lot of fun, and they played dance music, and there was other guys there to skate with, and they had the carnival and dressed up in costumes and skated, and people came, and it was spotlight. It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
So did you pass all your dance tests?
No, I still have one dance left to get, which I don't even remember which one it is, before I can even get to my goals.
Oh, you still got a senior silver dance?
I don't
left?
Even have my senior free skate. No, I need to do...
You got your gold free skate test, obviously, because you got your gold figures,
no,
right?
I don't think so. I got my gold figures. I have my eighth figure test. Now we're talking about things that people don't even know what we're talking
figures.
About.
Figures. Those were round things.
Round things and figure eights on the ice when you cleared the ice. And I have that, but I have my senior silver free skate. I'll tell you a quick story about that. Rosemary Marks was a famous judge.
Yes.
And so she had a single panel for my senior silver free skate, I believe.
Which
was
a big deal, by the way, because people, it used to have to be three judges. And unless you were, if you were a very, very, very good judge with high qualifications, you were allowed by the section to single panel. It was quite a big deal for a judge to be allowed to single panel.
Ultimate power.
That's right.
So, I think I'm world champion at the time. You know, trying a test where I just need a double lutz on one foot. But, you know, so this is a foregone conclusion that I'm going to pass this thing. But I'm going to really pass it. So I try the quad, but fall. And I try triple axel and fall. And I'm distracted, and it's not a normal situation. But I'm having fun, and she's yelling at me, and we're doing quite well. Two-thirds of the way through it, I've been so silly. I did backflip, landed on one foot, reached back to triple toe clean.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, backflip on one
impressive.
Foot, reached back, triple toe clean, and looked at her and smiled. And she said, I'm deducting for that. And I'm screaming at her going, what do you mean you're deducting? It was on one foot. So we're standing there arguing during my test. So the test was almost over. I skated over to her, sat on her lap. My music's playing. And I said, what do I got to do to pass this thing? And she looked at me. She goes, do a double lutz and a spin. I said, okay. So I got up quickly, did a double lutz, spin, music stops. And she goes, pass. So that was my senior silver free skate test.
So tell me.
I don't remember what we were talking about, by the way. But the carnivals.
Yes. Well, but yes.
The carnival was a huge thing because you had a guest skater.
Yes.
And the guest skater would come from who knows where.
That would be a big name, usually.
A big,
big deal.
If you were lucky, but it was a big deal.
Yeah, big deal.
If the guest skater had a double axel, I'd never seen a double axel in person before.
Yeah.
And so we're crowding the boards to get a glimpse of this. It was, I don't know who it was. It was amazing. And that was exciting. And then, of course, you're all working together and your parents are building the costumes. And we did something under the sea where I had scuba tanks on my back. Javex bottles, spray painted, and goggles and the whole thing. And then there was the quick change. It was the first time you ever had that, where you had to get off and change your clothes.
And where was
now
your quick
Now I've
change?
Done thousands of those. The
yes.
quick change, where? What do you mean? Oh, where was
In
it?
That rink.
The janitor's room was where the boys were, which
yes.
meant you got off the ice at one end and had to walk underneath the stands all the way to the other end
on the
of your costume
mats?
On the rubber mats. Well, no, it was cement, but you had your guards
with
on.
With your guards on,
yeah.
Okay.
And then you changed in the smelly, oily, there's the mop in the corner janitor room, and then got into your C-3PO outfit or whatever it might have been. I think it was C-3PO. C-3PO. I was definitely C-3PO. That's a Star Wars reference, by the way. And then you walk back quickly, and the girls got the closer ones. But I had an altercation one time.
Tell me about it.
I was going from the scuba tanks to the C-3PO outfit. And so you're kind of in a hurry. And I'm underneath the stands. And what the problem was is that I had a dance partner. And so we were pre-juvenile provincial champions.
That's impressive.
Michelle and I. And we were cute as bug's ears. And but she had a boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're kids, so who knows what that meant. But anyways, this guy thought he was her boyfriend.
So how old are you, about 13, 14?
Sure. Yeah, let's say that.
And 13. This is Rocky Mountain House?
And I'm in Rocky Mountain House. You're good at filling the blanks in, which I'm good at giving you blanks to fill in. So anyways, I'm going there. I'm dressed up like a scuba diver, and he blocks my path underneath, him and two buddies.
Ooh.
And now this is what he's been threatening for weeks. Here it comes. Here comes the beating. It's going to be the beatdown.
West Side Story.
Yeah.
That's right.
But the good thing is that I've got my skates on.
Yeah.
Except there's flippers, so my mobility is not heightened. But I'm taller than I usually am.
Yes.
I just don't have time for this. I'm a lover, not a fighter. So, but then all of a sudden the shadow comes from behind the other two guys, and it was Brent Allen, who's 3 or 4 years younger than me and 3 or 4 inches taller than me, and he's got his skates on, so he's 6 foot something. He grabs the one guy by his side of his head and the other guy in his side of his head and clunks them together like two coconuts. Bam! So the boyfriend and I are staring at this going, oh, wow. And he just looked at me and goes, last one's yours. And the boyfriend looked at me quick, and I went right on his nose and ran around him and didn't look back. I don't know what happened. But Brent was dressed as R2-D2, I think, and I don't know if you polished the floor with him or what, but that's the closest to a real fight.
So the life of a figure skater. So if you were going
to... It's rough out there, kids.
It can be. So if you were going to offer any sort of guidance or support or suggestions to kids who are wanting to follow their passion, because sometimes the kid that isn't the usual kind of kid, you know, you've got the... my daughter was a kid that liked Star Wars and Star Trek and all the rest of it as a girl. And sort of in grade 5 or grade 6, as other little girls are getting interested in makeup and boys and whatever, she's playing T-ball and
blaster
and all this stuff. So, yeah. So it's just all that kind of stuff. So what can you say to young people?
Well, the one thing that I think really helped is that I didn't really understand why it mattered to you if I was doing this. I'm not hurting you.
Right.
But sometimes it does matter, and bashing and that sort of thing does happen, and it's a terrible, terrible thing. And it's a real thing in our community that you can be physically and mentally abused by people who take an interest in something that doesn't hurt them.
Correct.
They just don't like what you're doing.
Right.
And they want you to stop because it bugs them. It scares them. But for me, it was always there, especially since I skated in the evil, close, small town.
The rivalry.
The rivalry, thank you.
Yes.
And they said things and pointed and called me names and did stuff. And I really knew that it didn't matter because I was doing what I wanted to do. Now, if I was doing something that I thought would bother them or hurt them, then that wouldn't be cool. But I'm just skating. And I was having fun. So, what I tell young people is I say, look, if you give them ammunition, all you can do is basically do the best you can.
Yeah,
and when they ask you questions, say, well, why do you wear those girly things? I'm like, well, you know what? You're right. This is a little bit effeminate, but it shows motion when I move, and that, it shows my speed and whatever thinking
sure.
you have. Just answer the questions. Don't give them the reason to give you more trouble. And so if you don't notice them and if you don't give them what they want, which is a negative response, then they tend to get bored and go away.
The other thing is for young people, tell somebody.
No, if it gets serious, you have to talk.
Yeah.
You absolutely open your mouth and you tell somebody. But I do seminars with all guys, and we get pretty powered up and fired up. And I tell them that figure skating is, if it's not easy. If it was, all hockey players would do it. we have a giggle out of that.
Sure.
But here's what figure skaters have to do. And we're a little bit ill-prepared. Dancers spend a lot of time towards artistic movement and presentation. Because they already know how to walk.
Mm-hmm.
We have to learn how to skate.
First.
And jump and spin and fly through the air on those skates. And that seems to take a precedent over interpretation of music and how you feel as a person when you're doing that. So dancers really have a head start on how they feel before the music starts. They have ownership to that movement, whereas we're just trying to stand up half the time.
Yep.
And as a young person, it's a tremendous challenge to be a good enough skater that you can then take some of your brain power towards the presentation aspect. And I'm very demanding when I commentate towards skaters who are on an international level and still can't do that.
Yep.
You know what? But that's my job. And I tell boys, especially in seminars, that guys, if you can stand at center ice knowing that Dr. Zhivago music is about to start.
Yep.
With figure skates on, when your friends are confused as to why you're doing it, having to wear something that your mom made and she didn't necessarily go to school and learn how to sew, then you are a brave young man. And
that's right.
Any job interview or walking across the dance floor to ask somebody to dance after that is easy stuff. And they all laugh. But you know what? If it was easy, all hockey players would do it.
So tell me, you've had some disappointments, obviously, in your career.
Never heard of that.
How do you... Is there one that stands out? Like, is there, or is there
regrets or disappointments?
Well,
I guess they're they could be the same thing. But
so let's talk about regrets. Any regrets as far as your skating career is concerned? Any stones left unturned?
Skating wise, the Olympics are a. I guess the biggest disappointment, probably, but the regret is one that people might may or may not know. The regret is not that I didn't get a medal at the Olympics. The regret is that I didn't get a medal at the Olympics for Canada. And again, it sounds like I'm running for office. But as a child, and we're spending a lot of time in this interview in Caroline, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's where everything started. You watch the Olympics on TV, and there's that... We're in the 70s, right? So there's that blasted black and white graphic.
The tally board.
Tally board. And Canada and Russia and, you know, USA and France and 16 gold and 13 bronze and all that stuff. I was fascinated by that and how it must feel to see, you know, one of your medals that you won go towards the tally of your country. Something about that board, that tally board, fascinated me. And so I wanted to do that. And that seemed to be... more realistic than winning the Olympic Games.
Okay.
And you know, to talk to Brian or Brian Boitano, you talk to Brian Boitano about how he envisioned himself winning. And that rarely ever happened in my career. It did on occasion at big events that I almost knew I was going to win this, but not very often.
Okay.
But I wanted to win a medal for my country, and that didn't happen. So I would have been tickled pink with a bronze.
So
never happened.
Of the wins that you had, the four world championship titles.
Four, yep.
Which was the toughest?
The one
that really meant?
The toughest was definitely Halifax.
Okay. And I was there, Kurt Browning. I watched it.
Yeah, my family was there and my roommate and my best buddy and my brother and my sister. Yeah, like they were all there. My nephew even. Great, great moment. One of my favorite moments in my whole career was that moment on the podium when 10 or 12,000 people were singing.
It was pretty special.
Oh, that was great.
How did you get there, though?
What happened was, why was it hard?
Yes.
It was hard because I won the year before my first world title.
Right.
And I wasn't expected to win. U.S. networks didn't even know who I was. And I know you love this story because I've told you before, but I was stepping on the ice for my long program in Paris, France. And I was in, where was I? I can't remember. Going into the, I was in fifth after figures. I was within striking range.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah. Step on the ice, but I can't get on the ice because Christopher Bowman, superstar,
yep.
Just skated fantastic.
Bowman the showman.
Bowman the showman, and he is getting interviewed right in front of the gate. So there was no door. Now they always have a door, but it was just an open hole that you had to walk through. But I couldn't go right because there's the cameraman, and cameras were huge back then, and there was Chris and his coach. So I'm like, you're killing me, man, because I got to get on the ice and skate around a bit before my program. So there was an opening between Chris and the camera. So I took it. You know, the hockey player came to me. I saw an opening, and I went for it. And so didn't want to be impolite, but I was kind of mad, so I didn't duck underneath the camera either. So I just walked into the interview and I said, hey, Chris, great skate. Congratulations. Gave a little wink at the camera and then walked through, took my guards off and took the ice. And then I skated and ended up winning.
Right.
An amazing moment, world champion. But the next year was really difficult because I wasn't expecting it, didn't know how to handle it. And I just assumed that world champions didn't do things like fall. But I'm really good at falling. It's something that I do most every day, even to this day. And so I wasn't a great consistent skater. I wasn't Brian Orser or Brian Boitano. I wasn't calculated. I was wild and crazy. And I did make mistakes. And that year was really hard. I flew all the way to Japan to hit my head in the ice in the short program. I couldn't tie my skates. I was totally fit to be untied. And I got to Halifax nervous. And I had to try to win again at home. And I had actually an injury that I didn't tell anyone about because it was kind of an embarrassing injury. It was the skin between my little toe and the next toe on my right foot was it was not a healthy place. And I found out later, I thought it was athlete's foot, and I didn't want to tell anyone. And it wasn't, it was like a friction thing between my toe.
Okay,
and
well,
It killed the skin, and it was super painful.
I bet.
And the only real
like
way I could
corn
get...
almost.
Yeah. Oh, it hurt so bad. And practice and everything. So I learned that if I put my foot in the skate early and tied it up tight, that it kind of went numb after a while.
Wow.
Then I would take it out, get a little bit of blood in it, shove it back in, and then do the 5-minute warm-up and try and skate or whatever. Timing was very key to this working. So my foot is numb and asleep and I'm in Canada.
And which foot is it?
My right foot. So
your landing foot.
It was a picking foot for flip and lutz and takeoff for loop.
And landing foot
for everything else. And I was an unhappy guy out there. I was uncomfortable. It wasn't a great skate. Viktor Petrenko didn't have a great skate either. I don't think it was a wonderful world championship for the men, but I ended up winning somehow. And it was a relief beyond relief. And then the next year I knew I was going to win. And the next year I kind of knew I was going to win too. So I was very comfortable with the last two.
So would people be surprised to hear about injuries and you when you perform?
They would.
Perform so well.
One day on a long drive from Edmonton to Calgary, I think, I just started thinking about my career. And this is 22 years ago or something. And I was frustrated because my back was bad yet again.
Yeah.
And it turns out that I sort of took nationals, divisionals, any internationals and worlds or whatever it might be. And no, my back was bad at that one, and my back was bad at that one. 60% of the time, my back was out to lunch when I competed.
That's amazing.
During my amateur career. And it was a big frustration for me. Then I turned professional. Near the end of my career, Paul Martini, remember Paul Martini as Barb and Paul? And
I certainly
the whole
do.
Thing, CBC commentators, and he's awesome. He came in and was helping me technically for a while.
I remember.
And what he did is, see, the mittens played a big role in my training, it seems, because he would grab a big mitten, and I would do a simple half a turn jump and land it. And I was landing with my arms open, as we do figure skaters, check the jump. We check the revolutions. We stop the revolutions with our arms and our free leg. And I was landing with my back really bent and my arms almost past my shoulders, which arched my back even more. So instead of the landing diffusing between my back into my hips, into my knee, and into my ankles, and the joints all sharing the load, everything just stopped in my lower back. And I was crushing my spine together. And he would smack my hand, and I would remember to move it forward. And he did that a lot until finally I started changing my landing position.
And now he does it just for fun.
Now I see him with a mitten, I run. And as a professional now, I'm 46 years old. I've been doing this for over 20 years as a professional, and I haven't missed a show. Like my
so
back,
it just made all the difference.
It changed everything, and core work and upper body workouts and that sort of thing. So being an amateur was like Wild Wild West, man.
Choreographer or skater? Which one do you like being better?
Oh, skater.
Okay.
Because the choreographers don't get that applause.
Okay, so you like the performance.
Oh,
aspect.
No, I will miss performing for many personal reasons, but I'll miss having that access to the young skaters, because when I perform, I'm on tour with Caitlin and Andrew and Scott and Tessa and Patrick Chen, and I'm right there putting my skates on beside them. And that for me, as a fan of the sport. And then when I commentate, I feel like I'm in the know. And when I
you
don't,
are, Kurt.
When
Jeepers.
I don't get access to the dressing room, it's weird going to the World Championships with the CBC coat on, because I keep forgetting that I can't walk where I want to because I'm an evil journalist. but I will miss that. But I still love performing, and this year I'm doing Singing in the Rain, which existed in TV special form 19 years ago, and I haven't done it in a live version ever. And to bring a Sandra Bezek, it was my concept, it was my idea to do it. But John Brunton from Insight and Sandra Bezek created a world of perfection, and that Singing in the Rain is beautiful. And now I'm trying to bring it to life. So Stars and Ice this year, I'll be doing Singing in the Rain with the original costume.
That's fantastic. Okay, last question, Kurt Browning. And you're not going to be held with your feet to the fire to this one, but among the favorite performances that you've ever seen on the ice, among them, because you're going to say, ooh, I wish I'd said such and such, give me five of your favorite. They're not the only ones, people, so don't write in yelling at them. But among your favorite performances of anybody.
Okay, you know what? That's impossible, but I will try to
among
think.
Them.
I will try to think of performances that I can't forget.
Okay.
So that would be, or maybe something that influenced me. So Bolero.
Okay, yes.
You didn't even understand why. It was spellbinding.
Yep.
Couldn't get past it. I'm thinking of an exhibition number that Scott Hamilton did, and I think I'm taking two exhibition numbers and making them one.
Okay.
But he did a serpentine step, and I saw him skate live, And I couldn't believe that feet could do that.
Yep.
I just didn't understand it. And I think that that moment influenced me a lot. And then he had a number where he was skating and a girl had left him and he took his coat and draped it over the radio at the end. And I was like, that is so artistic.
Liking it.
So Scott influenced me a lot. Brian Orser's Story of My Life.
Love that.
Story of My, I'm not going to sing. As a young man, I would see it live because I was touring with him. That was the tour where Mike Slipchuck and I were in the dressing room with him.
Okay.
And I knew I'd made it. And he skated it in that top-to-bottom white outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thin and bones.
Beautiful.
It was thin and bones. And he could replicate it every night the same.
I know.
And that, for me, fascinated me because I just couldn't fathom that it would be perfect and the same every night. We need some more, right? What else? Midori Ito?
Yes.
Midori Ito, when she was blowing triple
Midorable.
Axles.
That's what I call her.
Midorable. And you want one more? I'm going to go with Singing in the Rain.
Yeah. You know what? I don't blame you.
It's one of my, I can watch that over and over.
That's so much fun. Okay, last word belongs to you. Anything you want people to know?
I don't know when this will be on, but a really cool thing is happening. Patrick Chan is finally doing shows in Canada.
Yay.
I don't know why it took the boy that long to bite the bridle, but he did. And so he's doing Celebration on Ice in 4 shows in Ontario in this December. And I believe, not confirmed, but I believe he's going to do Stars on Ice this year.
That would be great.
If you're in Ontario, type in Celebration on Ice and look for that. And Jeffrey Buddle, Kurt Browning, Elvis Stoiko, and Patrick Chan. And between us, we have 10 world titles, and we're all in the ice together. And I just finished choreographing with Jeffrey Tyler, a group number for the 4 of us.
That's going to be fantastic. Kurt Browning, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
You owe me.
You have no idea how much. Okay, Paul, so 2-part interview, Kurt Browning, 48 minutes of gold. What do you think?
Yeah, it was definitely, it was definitely, there was a lot of gold there, yes.
It was really a lot of fun for us, and what people don't know is that I recorded it once, and it was 42 minutes of gold, lost the recording, and bless his heart, the next day he was willing to come in and talk to me again. So, Kurt Browning, wherever you are, thank you.
And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can get us at OpenKwangDoor. And to send us a message, contact@openkwangdoor.com.